Welcome to PA Politics. It's the show that's not afraid to find the nexus between politics and potty training. And you know what? They can both be really nasty businesses. Mm-hmm. It's also the place where two chicks, the two of us, talk about basically anything and everything. But now it's time to get real. I'm Nell McCormack-Abom.
And I'm Flora Pastorero. The topic we want to talk about today is politics, and it has gotten ugly and nasty and dirty lately.
Well, it's really unfortunate because we know there are so many pressing issues facing this country and we want them to be resolved. But what we're seeing on the airwaves, what we're seeing on the streets, and unfortunately what we have witnessed are incidents of violence and then, of course, the name calling on both sides that goes on, and it simply has to stop. We are really fortunate tonight because we have two leaders joining us who are just unbelievably good at bringing consensus to issues and finding solutions. I'm really proud that on our first episode of PA Politics, we have with us Alan Novak, who is the former chair of the Pennsylvania Republican State Committee, and TJ Rooney, the former chair of the Pennsylvania Democratic State Committee. Hey, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on PA Politics.
Well, thank you very much for having us.
All right, so it's like the $64,000 question, and I'll start with you, Alan. Civility, is it dead forever, or do you hold hope in your heart that we can actually turn this thing around in American political discourse?
Well, I have hope in my heart that we can turn it around, but I think it's going to take a big effort and a big commitment, and I think it's going to take leaders in both parties to call out the bad behavior that's going on by people aligned with each party.
Well, you know, TJ, you two came together and you formed a group called Rooney Novak with exactly this in mind, to work together across political lines to find solutions. Why'd you do it? And what do you think about this idea that it is a solvable problem?
No, it absolutely is. I mean, you know, virtually a recent poll, NBC, Wall Street Journal poll showed that 80% of Americans recognize that the system is broken and it's not working. So, you know, just if the pure nature of the incivility doesn't move you, the fact that the nation and the state are hindered by our incivility. We don't build stuff anymore. We don't build bridges. We don't take care of our roads. We don't invest in our future. That's because we get in our own way and we can't. So it will stop. It'll stop not because people have an epiphany, but people will finally say this isn't working. We're not going to take it anymore. You've got to find results.
Well, and to play off that, we're not building things anymore. We're actually tearing each other down. I am just amazed and shocked and disgusted every day. The things that I see on Facebook, just the name calling and the nastiness and tearing each other apart. And I'm wondering why we can't just agree to disagree. Why can't we just respect each other? Why can't we all just get along, gentlemen?
Well, it's true. And
you know,
go ahead.
Well, you know, politics has always been a contact sport, and it's always had a nasty side to it, and that's not the problem. The problem is what's new is we seem to hate each other. We seem to demonize somebody with whom we disagree, as opposed to understanding and listening to each other's points of view. That's the new phenomena here, and it's a behavior issue. And I think we need to call out bad behavior for what it is. The other part of this is technology of social media doesn't require the person issuing the statement or the tweet or the comment to look in the eyes of the person to whom it's directed. You and I sitting across from each other, TJ and I sitting beside each other, we are wired to get along, to listen, and to converse. But that breaks down when it comes to the technology of social media.
You know, I think you're exactly right, because there was a New York Times article a few years ago, but it talked about flaming, that people flame on social media because exactly that. They don't have to look the person in the
eye. There's the anonymity.
You have that separation.
You don't know it's me calling you a name.
But I think what would be helpful is just you two have found a way. What's the practical step you took to come together and give us an example, even if you can, of how you work across partisan lines when you might disagree vehemently on the policy position to take on an issue? Can you give us an example and how you might walk through that?
Well, listen, I think one of the ways that we're able to be successful in life and hopefully in business is that we recognize that 80% of us live in the same place. Now, sure, we argue and we have our differences over policy, but we're not arguing over things that people lose their lives over on a daily basis, and wars and religion and things that really divide people. We argue about, in relative terms, minuscule differences, and we do it with such, you know, we do it vehemently. The reality is 80% of us don't live in that space. You're right. You ladies are right. That sure, people who hide behind the anonymity of social media say things that they would never say to your face or in public, but they don't represent who we are as a people. The vast majority of us don't do that, you know, but it's because of those that hair on fire, tinfoil hat wearing segment of us who garners all the attention. You know, you people, you ladies know better than anybody. You women have been in the business. What do bookers, what do producers look for? They don't look for the people who are going to come and talk about sensible solutions. They look for the people who are going to set themselves on fire. So
yeah, that is going to be another show that we're definitely going to do, which is about how the media has really sabotaged itself.
I'm not pointing fingers though.
But it's true.
I get it. But the thing is, we have to realize, how do you get around it? Is your question. How you get around it is to realize that that's not reflective of who we are. And when you talk to people in real terms, in honest ways about where we are, what we're all about, where we want to go, people respond to that.
Well, and I think, how did you do it? How did they do it? That's what I'm curious about.
Well, you know, playing off your point too, I really believe this. I think you have a very, very vocal right. And I think you have a very, very vocal left. But I think most of us fall into that pool that I like to call the moderate majority. And we don't have time to scream and to call names because we have to get our kids to soccer and we have to get home and cook dinner and we have to pay the bills and we have to get to work. And I think most of us are civil in that moderate majority pool, but you've got that very vocal right and the very vocal left screaming at each other, calling each other names, and I just don't understand why it has to rise to that level of nastiness.
And I think, Alan, that moderate middle, what's disconcerting is that so many of those on the Republican Party left Congress this last term, and that's a concern. So what about that? How do we elevate those voices of moderation? And is there a key in redistricting, which the state Supreme Court has redrawn Pennsylvania's congressional districts, the idea being that perhaps the extremes won't be able to run, you'll have to come to the middle. But I'm curious what you think.
Well, we'll see. I think that's a start. I think gerrymandering was definitely a cause of some of the division. I think both sides have to realize that the key to future success is going to be solving problems, not keeping issues alive to gain an advantage in the upcoming election. And that's what I see too much of. I mean, what TJ and I firmly believe, and people like Congressman Dent and Costello who left because they were tired of the nonsense, are people that want to get things done. And when you want to get things done, you don't burn a bridge, you walk across the bridge. To get things done, you understand the compromise is not a dirty word, that both sides, in order to solve a tough problem, have to take some things that each side wants and accept some things each side doesn't want. And that's what we've lost sight of. But I think gerrymandering will drive, I think, elections and primaries more to the middle. If independent voters were allowed to vote in Pennsylvania, I think that would do it as well. But this idea that you walk across the bridge and solve a problem, not burning a bridge to keep the issue alive.
So who's the first one? Who has to extend that olive branch? Who has to do that to set the tone to say that this is unacceptable, that this type of discord and these discussions are tearing families apart? People aren't going home. They're skipping holidays because they don't want to be in the room with that other person. Who has to extend the olive branch, and how do we get the message across that your opinion's right and my opinion's right? There's no wrong here. Let's just agree to disagree respectfully.
I think the person who extends the olive branch is the person who wants to gain the upper hand. I mean, and there should be, you know, and if you're talking about arriving at an amicable conclusion, there need not be an upper hand. That both parties will arrive at that conclusion that we need to get together and figure it out on their own. But if that's not the case, then the person who I believe, because of what we just talked about, there are 80% of us in America and in Pennsylvania who believe in solutions and who believe that and understand that in order to get a solution, you have to arrive at a compromise. So somebody who begins that conversation for her, I would submit, is the person who will have the upper hand and will be, you know, advocating for the civil course of solving the problem. And, you know, well, kudos to whomever that person is.
TJ and Alan.
I couldn't agree with TJ more. I think that this concept of getting to, yes, to solve complicated problems requires each side to listen to the interests and of the other side, and incorporating as many of those interests and understanding those interests and incorporating them into a solution. That's the way you bake a cake. And I think smart people who want a record of achievement will start to go back to that kind of methodology.
I want you to look back in history, too. For each of you, answer this question. What political leader in the past was a great compromiser, knew how to come together with others, forge a solution to solve some of the biggest problems we've had in America?
One of my uncle's best friends in life, former Speaker Tip O'Neill. And for me, I mean, that's kind of the model. My uncle served in Congress for a long time and was a dear lifelong friend of the speaker. And so I was fortunate to, growing up to see, or, you know, reflected to see how important it was to get along with folks. So for me, Tip O'Neill is somebody who stands out in at least in my lifetime as somebody who I can point to and know fit that suit.
And this is why TJ and I get along so well, because I'm going to say Ronald Reagan. And of course, we know that Reagan and O'Neill were great working together from opposite sides of the aisle and opposite political philosophies.
Well, they were.
It felt like itchy and scratchy, but they got along at the end of the day, and they got stuff done.
So at the end of the day, and I'm going to pose this question to both of you, how is it important to be right? When you have these two factions arguing and one side says, I'm right, and the other side says, I'm right, and no, you're right, and you're wrong, does it really matter who's right? Does it?
No. I think the best leadership tactic that I've ever watched really good leaders employ is, I don't care if it's my idea. The best way to get your idea across is to let the other person think it's their idea.
That's right. Well, you know,
and to me, great leaders have figured that out. It's not so important that I get credit for the idea. I just want to be part of the solution.
Indeed.
And if you don't both feel pain, then chances are someone got the better of someone else, right?
somebody got rolled over in that case.
But, you know, what is tough is if you really have an issue that you feel, I'll call it a moral or an ethical calling to, and you feel that compromise would...
You're not giving in,
right.
But you might think you are.
You're not giving in, and you think you're on the side of righteousness. That's hard to swallow, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, sometimes there are going to be agreements to disagree. There's some issues that by their nature can't be resolved when there's a moral belief attached to it. But there's pragmatic ways to either find some compromise around the edges of those issues, or sometimes it's just, look, we can't agree on this one, but let's look for what we can work together to do next time on another issue.
And find some commonality.
Always keep looking for a way to work with each other.
And I'd submit that on so many of the kind of those visceral kind of gut check issues of conscience, they tend not to be that partisan. They tend to be bipartisan. If you talk about women's reproductive rights, they tend to be bipartisan in nature. If you talk about gun safety issues, they tend to be bipartisan in nature. Those aren't our problems. We can figure those out. We have a long history of doing that. It's the little things. It's the everythings that get in the way. I mean, we used to fight over big things. Today, we fight over everything.
We do. That is so true.
You know, because every day, because of the partisan, the way we're built, the way the mousetrap is built at the moment, you know, every day you're scored on whether or not you capitulated or gave in. And God forbid you had lunch or a cup of coffee with the bloke from the other side of the aisle. You know, you get excoriated on that by anonymous people on Twitter and Facebook, and people avoid that. It's like avoiding, you're putting your hand in a flame. So, you know, to the extent that you know, we focus on stuff, focus, as Alan says, on getting to yes, that, you know, that tends to solve many of the problems.
Well, I'll tell you what,
if you get there.
Everybody, I think, heard that Paul McCartney car karaoke segment.
Wasn't that great?
He talked about Let It Be. It was his mother coming back to him seeking peace. And I think that's what we want to say. Let it be. And I want to say that Alan serves as president of Novak Strategic Advisors, a full-service lobbying and public policy firm. Alan's also with TJ, co-founder of Rooney Novak Group, and they really seek bipartisan solutions. TJ Rooney is president of his own lobbying firm, which is Tri-State Strategies Pennsylvania. It builds on his 25 leaders. You know, he was elected at the tender age of 27 to the Pennsylvania House
Very
of Representatives.
Very impressive.
You both have a long and distinguished record. We are so proud and happy that you joined us. And thank you. Thank you. Thank you for
gentlemen.
All the work you're doing. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us, and good luck with your podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Honored to be part of your initial effort. Thank you very much.
We loved having you here. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this edition. I think the message today is let it be, and let's just all get along.
Let's get along.
We, of course, want to know, what do you think of us? What do you think of what you've heard tonight, and what do you think of you want to hear about in the future? You can certainly send us an email. The email address is PAPolitics. You want to spell that?
Sure. It's PAPOLICHICKS at penwatch.org. We want to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to PAPolitics.